Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
There. A little scurry there. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And when we're all sitting in the same room with headsets on,
we're We the People.
We operate as We the People Radio. Oh, man. We have had Bill and I. We left Bob here. Bob got to come here. But this morning we went up to Airport Days at Fall River to recognize a 92-year-old Navy pilot and one of the guys that started the Sheriff's Flying Posse up there almost 70 years ago. So anyway, that was pretty fun. But it is an hour and some change away. So we got back from Walnut Creek at 1 this morning, jumped up this morning, went to Fall River. So we've had a lot of seat time.
Yes.
About 600 miles of seat time, actually,
yeah,
I'm
not liking the car anymore.
Bill's not liking the car. Last 24 hours. So we've listened to a lot of – the only reason I include our travel itinerary is we've spent a lot of time listening to progressive radio over the last 24 hours. And I got to tell you, if I hear one more crazy thing about the Paris Climate Agreement – I mean,
this is on Sirius XM.
Sirius XM Radio 127. It used to be 127 Left, and now it's 127 Progress. I know, it makes me laugh too. It's funny how that happens. Anyway, it's hilarious. So it reminded us of one of our favorite videos, and so in honor of pulling out of the climate agreement and saving, you know, $3 trillion and not doing things that mean nothing to save the planet, we're going to play a little favorite from the Earth First group. And I think it was from 2008. I tried really hard to find out when this first started. We've played it several times. You'll enjoy it. And the video is linked on our website at wethepeopleradio.us so you can share it with friends or watch it. You know, if you're having a bad day, this is a crowd pleaser every time.
This one will bring back memories.
Yeah, the video is only half as good as the audio, so you're not missing a lot, even though it is a video. All right. And direct from Earth First, here's how bad it gets if we destroy the planet. Yeah, that's crying in the background. We'll be providing the voiceover laughter.
Deep in the woods of North Carolina, an extremist eco-group called Earth First bewails the violation of American nature.
I want to mourn the loss of all the old growth trees I've seen.
Kathy Griffith should have taken some tips from
her. We love them and that we don't want them to die. That there are some people here who do care. So I want you to know that, trees.
Yes, please.
That we care.
Don't interrupt. Tree stalking.
I think we are deeply hurting in America. I think we are deeply craving answers. I think that we've lost our identity.
Overplaying the 70s? Where are the 70s coming from?
This cathedral. Bring me to those guys. Bring me to this rock that has the most incredible life.
A rock.
Talk to the
That
rock.
Makes me feel alive.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest, and I've felt outraged, but I didn't scream and I didn't cry.
Here it comes.
And I need to.
You go, sister.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, so.
We're going to leave them in peace.
had to get that out of our system. Well, the whole way home, all we could think of was that video. And I don't know. If you're sick of this climate hysteria as we are, we thought that might make you feel happy. And that's what we're about, making people feel happy or frustrated and angry, which is our next topic.
That's right.
But we're here with our guest. We have not talked to Lauren on the air since 2015. I don't know what the heck we've been doing, but anyway, she has not been on since 2015. I have linked those previous shows, though, and she is the founder of a group called Veteran Warriors. And their goal is to be the catalyst which forces the necessary changes to the manner in which the Department of Veterans Affairs does business with the veteran. What a novel idea. And we have Lauren trapped in there. Are you in there, Lauren?
Yes, I am. Hello.
You were so quiet, we couldn't tell if you were there or not. now that we got the Earth First fun out of the way.
But good. That was terrifying to hear.
Good Lord. Can you believe these were grown adults sitting in the middle of a bunch of bushes in the woods bawling and crying and petting weeds? I mean,
tree bark.
It was a very
sensitive moment.
And, you know, we never get sick of it. We play it all the time. We just think it's just too funny. I can't. And they thought it was serious. People didn't they didn't even post it as a joke. They posted it to be serious to show how deeply emotional they are about the whole thing. Yeah. So I do not have a biography for you, and I don't know why we never posted one other than maybe I just didn't have it. But I look back on our previous pages. Anything you want to tell folks about your history besides the fact that you're a Navy veteran, and thank you for that?
It was an honor and a privilege to serve. Okay. That's my pat answer. I served 10 years in the Navy. I enlisted very late in life. I enlisted at 39 years old.
Really?
And, yeah.
I did not know that.
I waited until I was done raising my kids, and I enlisted. And after about a little over a year at my shore command, I deployed to Iraq for 600-day orders.
Oh, so just a little spin over there and back, right back, huh?
Yeah, just a little jaunt.
600 days later.
I was supposed to go there to do what is called rule of law. And essentially it was to help the Iraqi government reestablish their judicial system. Well, we got there in February of 07. There's no such thing as a judicial system. Frankly, everybody was spending all their time trying not to get blown up. And so they didn't need me for that. And our battalion commander overheard me talking one night with some other people around the campfire kind of thing, and found out that I used to build and race cars as a kid, a young adult. And he said, "Oh, well, I want you to be my convoy driver." Okay. And I looked at him like he had three heads. Excuse me, what though is that, sir? And, lead convoy driver and trainer. Our core group of people on our convoys was 25 people. Almost all of the Navy, actually. And, I had over 350 missions. I lost track at 350. Some of them were short. We called them little milk runs, 12 miles down to Baghdad and back. Some of them were long. Some were, go, stay there for 9 days. Fortunately, we were incredibly meticulous about everything, security and intel, and we didn't lose a single truck. And when all of your team is younger than you, and you're in charge, you're the lead driver, that's a feat. And it's the biggest thing I'm proud of over there that we did, is that I managed to bring everybody home vertical and send them back home to their mommies and wives.
Outstanding.
That's awesome.
And I contracted a nasty lung disease, and I basically shattered. It's called the trapezium. It's a bone in your wrist that holds your thumbs on. In both hands, I shattered them.
Wow, how'd you do that?
Partial amputation. Dukes of Hazzard driving in a 7-ton vehicle.
Oh.
Lots of, and it really was, like in a lot of cases, it really was like taking a up-armored Humvee and jumping Jersey barriers and stuff.
Wow.
So, yeah, the human body is not built for that. And by the time I got home, I couldn't button my own clothes. I couldn't do anything with my hands. And my job in the Navy is a yeoman, which is an executive assistant, basically. You need to be able to do stuff with your hands, like type and write and answer the phone and all that. Couldn't do it.
Doesn't sound like 7-ton trucks were in that job description.
No, they weren't. Nowhere in there. I lucked out. The command I got attached to when I got home was a quasi-military command. It was basically, we had three military people, me being one of them, and the rest were all civilians. So they were pretty, they were real lucky, or I was real lucky to be there because they were real easy to work with. They knew I had a lot of appointments. I'd go to the doctor all the time, surgeries.
Were they able to fix your thumbs? Having,
no. Partial amputations on both hands and ended up having a lung biopsy done in October of 2008 and discovered I have a terminal lung disease. That being said, until we started coming home from in this conflict, that disease had not been seen since the 70s. Mm. It's that rare. So they only had that, you know, 50-year-old data to work from. And the lifespan was supposed to be between 5 and 7 years from when you contract it. And most of us that are, especially that are at the stage that I'm at, we pretty much think that it's essentially just the medications that they use to treat the symptoms that has kept us alive this far.
Yeah, because you've exceeded that, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm past that now. I'm basically on borrowed time, which is fine. My lung function is running between like 35 to 40% now. And there's not a whole lot I can do. In addition to this, I have some pretty gnarly PTSD. So there's not a whole lot I get to do anymore. Mostly I spend my time aggravating the VA.
I was going to say, but you've put the limitation to good use.
Yeah, this is what I've got left is that. So that's what I do. And my husband, God bless him, is not only patient, but accommodating with not just taking care of me and making sure that we have everything we need, but, you know, I'm like, I gave him 6 days notice this last time when we went to D.C. in April. By the way.
Yeah, because you guys, spend a lot of time in D.C. We should take a really quick break before we move into that. And no wonder I did never print your bio. It's much better if you tell the story, and it's amazing. You're more amazing than I even thought, and I've known you for a while. Thank you for that. We will be right back. You are listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curve, yeah. Flattening the hills. Someday the mountain might get up, but the law never will. Making their way.
A little Dukes of Hazzard for you there, Lauren.
Outstanding.
Outstanding.
Yeah, that's what we do here.
We try to be outstanding. Oh, my goodness. So there's been, you know, before we get distracted on things, I want to make sure and just put it on our list of things to do about the Supreme Court deal on benefits. We want to make sure we hit that today. Because that was good, that I saw yesterday. That was good news.
There's a lot of back and forth about it. From a legal standpoint, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. You want to explain?
No, I'm not an attorney.
Do you want to explain to people? Oh, good. None of us are, so we can all pretend to be one.
Yeah.
You want to explain to people what exactly that means?
Well, the biggest issue that face that many veterans face is divorce. And invariably, There's children involved, and divorces go through state court. And unfortunately, since the dawn of time, the state courts like to ignore the federal government. And in many cases they can, but in this particular issue they cannot. They've chosen to do so anyway. And the federal law is crystal clear on utilizing disabled veterans' compensation for the purposes of alimony and child support calculations have long, it's people have to fight and fight and fight and many times lose. The judge, a state judge, won't even listen. They don't care. They're like, I don't care what that says. I don't care what the law says. I'm going to do it my way. You're not going to tell me how to run my court. It's still a violation of the federal law. And in, especially because of the way the state schedules are run, in there can be a case, I mean, I know for a fact that one veteran in New York, he had two kids, they got divorced, and she was going to be entitled under the state law, the state schedule, to over $3,000 a month. And when he got out of the military, his net income was going to be $2,300 a month. No matter what, he was going to have to get a job. Basically, his 21 years of service was pointless. Every dime of it was to go to her.
Which is not what...
Never mind.
Disability compensation, which is obviously not appropriate for disability compensation because his... I mean, I realize if someone is disabled, it does affect their family, but they're technically not the disabled person. I mean, it is the service member.
Well, and the big problem is you're talking about disabled service members.
Right.
And when you have someone that's 100% total and permanent, the average right now, if they're alone, it's around $3,000 a month is their compensation. And that, I mean, it's up on the Federal Register. Anybody can check it. The problem is that veteran cannot go out and get a second job if a court awards the custodial parent, you know, $2,800 a month in child support. He can't. That veteran cannot go get a job to support himself. So to stay out of jail, the veteran pays the child support and then literally has $200 a month left.
And gets to be
to
homeless.
Live on.
And just to be clear,
yeah, he gets to be homeless.
We're not saying that there's a just. I always hear people in the background that are going, "What? You can't go out and get a job." Yes, there's no law that prevents them from doing it, but if their disability is such that they're considered 100% disabled, the high likelihood is that it prevents them from going out and getting a job. So when they strip all the
at 100% total and permanent, that process is not nearly as simple, easy, or
fast,
simplistic as a lot of civilians think it is. It's not. And when you end up at that point, the very thought process of trying to go out and work, first off, you've just been told your livelihood, you are no longer able to work. And for some of us, I'm 100% total and permanent. Getting that information from my doctor that after the lung biopsy that my career was over now. Period. Done. And then further down the road, finding out that I not only can't work anymore, but I can't even clean my own house. And I'm a clean freak. And for me to not be able to keep up with keeping my house clean, it's devastating. Now, adding to that you can't support your children.
Right.
Or if you do support your children, you might as well go live in a cardboard box. No disabled veteran should have to make that decision to either support their family or go live in a box. And I'm glad that they finally came to the Supreme Court's attention because our organization, we no longer do casework per se. We handle almost exclusively legislative and lobbying work. But we've in the past handled significant number of cases helping veterans fight off state judges and state level attorneys who all they could see was the dollar sign. You know, they thought, oh, this veteran's 100% disabled. They're getting $3,000 a month. They need to cough up, you know, half of it. Well, no, because that veteran will never be able to go get a job if you make him homeless. I mean, you guys are in California. The rents alone, $3,000 a month, is not a lot of money to live on.
No. No, and we've got a $400 billion universal health care plan being voted on currently. So, yeah, I don't really care. Yeah. I don't care how much money, and that's just in our state, of course, which is just completely crazy. And then we've got Jerry's bullet train to build. We've got a new gas tax. So, yeah, it doesn't matter how much money you have. They want it all.
Somebody wants all of it all the time.
Lord, because I've spoken with many different service members who said, "What am I going to do? You know, this is all I have, and this is what I have to live on, and now it's all being taken in alimony." It's one thing if it, you know, child support. I guess at least I don't know if you're living in a box. It's not better, but it's way better than alimony for somebody who left you and is now working.
Right. Alimony thing is, for I think that's the most archaic thing in the world anyway, but the whole concept of touching a veteran's disability for alimony, no. And I had somebody in our group, we started a big, huge rant about, you know, well, you know, if that veteran dies, you know, we get nothing, and, you know, we get nothing from the military or the VA or anything. You know, you guys are taking this all the wrong way about this case, about the Supreme Court's decision. And but I left that alone because, to be blunt, I've been both. My first husband of 11 years was a career Army. I was an Army wife. We moved all over the country, went to Germany and back. And he put in 27 years. And I'm still waiting for my child support. And my youngest son is 31 years old. And I actually have to wait until that man turned 65 to attach his military retirement because of those rules.
Mm.
So I don't have a lot of sympathy. I want fairness is all. I want everybody to be treated equally. But because we weren't married for more than 50% of his career, I have to wait till he's 65 to collect. Which is fine, because I'm going to take all of it then. That's fine. But the idea is that taking from a disabled veteran, when that is their only income, when you can still go out and work, and I don't care whether it's a male or female, it's irrelevant.
Right.
If you can still go out and work. Yeah. I mean, I'm a veteran. I'm 100% disabled. If my husband and I split up, first off, we'd have a big problem if he tried to come after me for child or for alimony, but that'd be a whole nother story. The idea is that, you know, let's start looking at fairness and equitable exchange. And the true, and they actually, the Supreme Court discussed that. You know, this is the most equitable way around it. You cannot, when someone's on a fixed income, and it'd be no different for someone's on Social Security. If they're disabled and they're on Social Security, they don't have the ability to go out and make more money. So taking, you know, a third or half of their money, what does that do? That literally just turns the debt over to the rest of the American public for them to pick up the slack. Let me get off my soapbox there.
No, it's but this was important. I saw this yesterday and I thought, shoot, this is a great timing, because I knew we had you on today. And I want people, I'm sure you can find this if you Google it, but if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, it's right in the middle of the page. And it sends you a link. You don't have to, if you have had, or you know somebody who has had their disability benefits attached for child support or alimony, this would be a great reference point for them, so that they can go learn about how those decisions have been vacated, but they need to make sure they're getting their money back. You know, that's been reassigned.
That's the big thing, is it's not just saying, okay, we're going to start now. They have vacated those orders.
Right.
At the Supreme Court level. And that's really important for people to know, because I can't say, I've lost track of how many thousands of veterans have told us, male and female, well, you know, I'm being attached for this much, and I give them, here's the federal statute, here's the case law that supports that statute, what the judge is doing is wrong. And they're like, I showed it to them, threatened to have me arrested for contempt if I mentioned it again. You know, this isn't an option any longer.
No, and you know, the family court, I don't know anybody who says, oh, gee whiz, our family court system is awesome. I mean, that's a big complaint. There's not a huge amount of oversight. You have people who are county employees who do the casework and stuff like that, but the court systems are somewhat autonomous, and out here in rural areas, it's not like you have 15 judges. You know, you have two or one.
Yeah. So, and don't piss them off.
Exactly. And if you've gotten on the wrong side of that, in a lot of cases, it's just because people are frustrated, and I get that.
Right.
So anyway, we just want to make sure that the word gets out there that you finally do have a leg to stand on, because obviously you started, if you were 100% service connected, disability, it's only $3,000 a month. And I say only because even if you just cut that in half, who can live on $1,500 a month, really? And you can't, you certainly aren't hiring attorneys with that kind of money. Can you walk in? Hi, Mr. Attorney. I've got $1,500 a month to live on. You know, how much do you charge?
I actually helped my son. His ex-wife tried to get, and all he was getting was disability. And he was at 40%. So I think his disability was like $700 a month.
Yeah, and see, that's not
good. Florida is very generous with child support. And it's not that he didn't want to support his child, but that literally was all he had to live on.
Right.
And his disability, he'd asked for an increase. He has 5 ruptured discs in his back from combat. Ruptured discs. He ruptured them at 22 years old. The only cure for it is to fuse his spine. He's seen numerous specialists and everything else. And they've essentially told him, as soon as you're ready to sit in a wheelchair the rest of your life, we'll do it. So he works, but he can't work a lot because of his back. She wanted half of his disability. And I handed everything to my son's attorney, and I said, this is what the law says. And he looked at me, and this guy's a criminal prosecutor, used to be a CIA agent. He's like, where did you find this? I said, this is what I do. He's like, oh my, I've never seen this. He is now a divorce attorney. And a criminal defense attorney, and he'd never seen this. He never knew that that's the way the law said.
Yeah, see, that's the real shame of it. And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there. So, got to take a really quick break. But I mean, on the break, really, I think people ought to consider we have a really high veteran suicide rate. So take all the things that you've heard about what's going on in the life of veterans when they return home from service and add this log to the fire, and it starts to, the picture gets more clear. So anyway, we will be back with our guest, Lauren Price from Veteran Warriors. We hope you'll join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
The doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down.
Another song that never thought of that way. Thanks, Bob. Okay, so Lauren Price with Veteran Warriors. Veteran Warriors provides experienced Hill advocacy. That would be Capitol Hill. Advocacy, research, and media outreach for veterans who have lost their voice. And that's really where you guys shine. I'm always sending somebody your direction. Because it isn't just local type of stuff. I mean, this is you guys really get into the nuts and bolts of what's happening in government dealing with veterans. So besides this Supreme Court case, what else is big? You've been posting a lot of stuff on Facebook. That's why I thought you should probably come on. I'm like, oh, no, Lauren posted another thing I can't read right now, which is great.
As everybody knows, you know, when the new administration took over, you know, there's a clean sweep usually of all new cabinet members. And we ended up with not a clean sweep in the VA. Instead of bringing in anybody new or anybody from his existing team, POTUS chose to keep, at the time he was the Undersecretary of Health, Dr. David Shulkin, and he nominated him to be the Secretary of the VA. So we got a previous administration holdover, and just for giggles, the day he got nominated, I went and did a search through not just our records, but the OIG's investigations and things like this. And I found 2.5 pages of substantiated investigations by the OIG, never mind media stories about, you know, Heinz VA and their cockroaches, and just pick a story. There's just 2.5 pages of scandals and outrageous things happening in just the healthcare side. I didn't even get into the VBA side because at the time he was in charge of the VHA. I was like, did somebody not give this to POTUS that this guy has been in charge for the last 20 months while all of these things were going on? And apparently they didn't. So he got confirmed. And everybody's still kind of waiting to see what he's going to do, because the things that are happening, like there's a program in the VA called the Caregiver Program, and there are two sides to it. One is called the General Caregiver Program, which is for everything pre-9/11, and then there's the post-9/11 Caregiver
For service program. Members who served pre-9/11.
Right.
Right, okay.
All the way back to World War II. And the services and benefits that come through under that general program are not well rounded out, and they are not, even some of the stipends for the caregivers to stay home and take care of, one of them is called aid in attendance, are nominal. They're really not enough to actually do the job. And it's very poorly managed. It's all these different programs. I think there's 16 different programs. And, like, no two talk to each other. So then the post-9/11 program, that one was spearheaded by Wounded Warrior Project. This is their flagship law and program. And when it went into effect 6 years ago, it was for those who were injured in combat, and they had to have at least one, not catastrophic injury, but one serious injury. And it could have even been PTSD or a traumatic brain injury or anything like this that prevented them from functioning and being able to take care of themselves. And it sounds like a great plan, except for the fact that you exclude literally half of the veteran population, because there's also a stipend that goes along with it. And that stipend, it's zip code dependent, but for the highest level, which is Tier 3, a caregiver could receive upwards of $2,500 a month to care for the veteran.
And why is
that? That's based on 40.
It's zip code dependent because just cost of living?
Well, it's not cost of living. It's based on the Department of Labor, the salary, the hourly wage that it's calculated on, is based on CNAs.
Okay.
for, and the they take it from the Department of Labor.
And what are they, I hate to acronym people, but what is that, Certified Nursing
Assistant?
Certified Nurses Assistant.
There you go.
Yeah, which is the that is what Certified Nurses Assistants do. You know, they help they help their patients get dressed, they remind them to take their pills, they help them prepare meals, they help them shower.
Do they live
all
there?
All of these things.
Or are they, like, come by every day? I guess it could be different.
Under the caregiver program, the person has to live in the house with the veteran.
Okay.
That's one of the criteria, which that's kind of a bad thing, because if you're a single kid or single guy or single woman, you now have to have someone come move in with you.
Yeah.
To make them eligible for the program. And even if you could live by yourself, now you have to have this roommate. We have a lot of cases where the parents of, especially the younger, some of the real catastrophically wounded soldiers, that their parents are taking care of them. And they're the caregiver. Now, it went along pretty well. The program, you know, and I'm going to caveat all of this by saying, to this very moment, there still is not a policy, set of policies or procedures or a handbook for any of the VA facilities that run these programs across the country. There's no roadmap for them. There's no set of rules. There's the law. There are two things, the law and the final rule, but there's no policy manual. They literally, to this moment, have not sat down and drafted the policy and procedures on how to run this program. So after 6 years, actually, well, after 4 years, we discovered each facility was making up the rules as they go and making up rules that in many cases were direct violations of the law and making decisions on who could be in the program and who wouldn't. And, oh, well, you know, we if you have PTSD, we're not letting you in. Or we another place we only will let you in for PTSD. You know, never mind you've lost your leg, it doesn't matter. Just ridiculous and sometimes absolutely arbitrary things. We started last August in what ended up being a 9-month investigation into the program. Because when you just get on social media for 5 minutes and you mention the word caregiver.
Yeah.
And yeah, literally, your computer will melt.
Yeah, right.
Your computer will melt.
It's like Bill's laptop that I'm working on right now. It's like it has a virus. We better.
Yeah, there's like smoke coming out of it now.
Yeah. Okay, and on that note, Bob, do you have any fun music for us? We better take a quick break or we'll be in time trouble. We'll be right back.
Okay.
We're chatting with Lauren Price from Veteran Warriors. We're going to drill into the caregiver issue. And you know what? It doesn't affect you, it affects somebody you know, so perk up there. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, so you discovered that the caregiver program in the Veterans Administration was not uniform. There was a law written that allowed people to get that benefit, but there was nothing rolling it out in a uniform fashion. And when was that? 9 months ago, you said?
9 months ago, we started the investigation, yeah.
All right. Okay, so now we're up to speed. And what'd you find? Well, what are you still finding?
Well, we're still finding. It took the VA 2 months to finally answer my FOIA. I finally got that in last week, and it's raw data, so we're working that thing to find out what their numbers say. Our numbers, based on reports issued to Congress every year by the program director, show that the VA has, their term is revoked, 26,000 families from this program since January of 2014.
So they were at one point approved, and now they've been revoked using what for criteria if there's no program on paper?
Well, the criteria would be things like, oh, you've graduated. Congratulations.
What?
What?
Yep.
Okay, all of us have the same, like, what? Look on our faces.
Yeah, everybody's got the look, and yeah, and that's exactly what the problem is that people, we have over 400 vetted cases whereby we have a clinical reviewer. This, to do a clinical assessment of a disabled person, this is her civilian job. She does it for a civilian healthcare company. So she actually went through these cases, and each one of them, there were more. These are the vetted cases of blatant, there was no excuse, there was no justification for termination, over 400 cases. Back in February, we filed a request with the House Committee on Veterans Affairs to hold a hearing on this, based on this evidence. Got a lukewarm response. Fortunately, our congressman is in full support of it, but, you know, he's not the only guy there, so. We did get a roundtable discussion with the Subcommittee on Health, Congressman Wenstrup, him, Congressman Beto O'Rourke, and some people from the VA and some of the big six VSOs. And we actually got to sit there at the big kids' table this time.
Mm.
We were the only ones that presented recommendations, true course corrections that will fix the loopholes and the problems. It was 4 pages long. Out of all of them, we were the only ones to do so. We were the only ones with any evidence as to what's wrong with the program. They have anecdotal evidence. You know, they've got cases where people are being terminated for no reason. Bedridden veteran, hasn't been out of bed in 6 years. Oh, you've graduated. You have, according to our records, you've recovered.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, talk about insulting.
Yeah, no kidding.
And appeals that are being handled, even though the law says that the appeal has to go before a board of specific criteria, the appeals are generally handled by the person that revoked you.
Yeah, right.
So we're now working with, there's a woman, her name is Dr. Linda Davis. She answers directly to the secretary. Her position is brand new, and she's called the Veterans Experience Officer.
Oh, yeah.
And we met with her and her counterpart from the VHA on the Friday, on April 29th, and went over our recommendations and the various scenarios and evidentiary stuff that we found. We found VA employees altering records to support these revocations. Just some pretty bad stuff.
Any particular areas? Like, you know, Lauren, I'm curious, are you looking at any particular geography, or are you just pulling cases from all over the country?
We have cases from every corner of the nation, including Alaska.
I just didn't want to assume.
but we've identified hotspots where there's an extremely high percentage of cases. And there are two in California. Loma Linda is one of them. And off the top of my head, I can't.
And this is a facility. This is people connected to that facility or people who live in that town?
No, people connected to the facility.
Okay.
The hotspot being, if you're in the program, they have a high percentage at this particular facility of revocations or tier reductions, dropping you from, you've been a tier three, the highest level for 3 years, and all of a sudden you're knocked down to a tier one because you've recovered so much. I like to tell the story about Prescott, Arizona. Last October, Prescott, Arizona had a caseload of 250 cases on the caregiver program in their office. And within 30 days, they had revoked 220 of them.
Jeez.
And
that's a cost-cutting little champion there.
The worst part about that. Well, and we tell everybody that, you know, it's not just kicking people off the program. There's collateral damage to this. Very significant collateral damage.
Okay.
I mean, over and above just the income loss. There's insurance loss.
We're going to have to, we will detail the, I'm going to have to make myself a note because, you know, I'm 55 now, so I don't remember things the way I'm supposed to. And five minutes of news where they talk about, I don't know, climate foolishness or something, you know, could get me completely derailed. But, yeah, we, you know, how easy that happens. When we come back, though, we'll delve into all that. Our guest today is Lauren Price. She's with a group called Veteran Warriors. And you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Be right back.